calling me Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Is there no sweeter sound than that of your own name? Buried in cheers and applause? There is not. Ooh, listen to this. There's a literary cliche, a trope of the guy who travels around the world in search of the old man in the mountain, the ancient one, who has cracked the code, unlocked the secret of lifelong happiness. And like Indiana Jones, there's always a price or a booby trap, something that comes between the seeker and the wise ancient one and his knowledge. And when, after years of searching and finding dead ends and blind alleys and doorways to nowhere, he finally clambers to that perilous, jagged, windswept outcropping and hoists himself over the top, belly down, and crawls until he's face to face with the white-bearded old man with the leathery skin and the eyes that burn like backlit diamonds. At last, after a lifetime of struggle and journeying, he has found the man with the answer. And what does he get?
Erase your sunscreen.
I can't say I've climbed any mountains in search of the secret of happiness, but I may have had a glimpse of that secret just this past Saturday night. Not on some soaring peak in the Sierras or the Himalayas, but in a dark club deep in the bowels of Hollywood. Hard to believe, I know. But stay with me, and I'll turn you on to my discovery in a little while. What is the key to happiness? It's the eternal question. We can blow a lifetime in pursuit of something, and we're not even settled on the definition. What the hell is happiness? It's the opposite of sadness, right? But how far opposite? If the emotional range is like a gas gauge in a car, is anything below half full unhappy? And anything to the right of half full happiness, is it just a matter of degree? You'll get some really wide-ranging answers to that, depending on who you talk with. Ask someone who's had a life of misfortune or poor health, and their definition will be a 180 from someone whose life has been a boat ride. But fate aside, what can we do that will make our life more happy than unhappy? Is there a typical type of person that seems to be more happy than others? What do they do or eat or think that makes them that way? Can we even really know what happiness is until we've experienced misery? You know, you can tell almost upon meeting a person what kind of life they've had. Those that have faced real adversity, a serious illness, or near-death experience, or have lost someone close to them, a parent or a sibling, you can sense that. In a person, they can be smiling or even laughing, but beneath, there's a subcurrent of, what? Gravitas, I suppose. They've lived through some tough times, and it shows. When you meet their eyes, it's almost as if some subliminal message passes between you, and you just know. Sometimes people can attain quite an advanced age and still have the shallowness of a person with a fraction of their years. Which makes me think more about the idea of reincarnation. The term old soul might sound goofy, but some people really are. They can still be kids as young as 9 or 10 or 11, and somehow they have an understanding of life and the world, a generosity of spirit that their grandparents still have not achieved. And you wonder, what's it going to take? And you realize some people, regardless of age, will never, ever get it. They would have to be born again. they are simply lacking something, an awareness. Or maybe they have spiritual myopia or an astigmatism. Maybe the term is enlightenment, which is one of the crossroads where the Take No Shit Dojo and I reside. The other road being madness. I believe he cannot have one without at least a touch of the other. Which reminds me of a story told to me by my old and good friend, Tony Spumante. For newer listeners, Tony and I go way back to New York, where he was and is a highly placed member of one of the infamous five families, and I'm not telling you which one, but it was definitely not the Columbos, Lucchese's, or Bananos. And so one night at Tony's house, we were sitting around sipping Sambuca. It was usually Sambuca or Amaretto. Once in a while, it was Scotch. And so Tony tells us how the previous week, he was on his way to a meeting to conduct a little business. And he gets a blowout in his coupe de ville. He pulls over on the shoulder and notices not too far off Creedmoor Psychiatric Hospital, which was and is one scary-looking monument to government bureaucracy. Now back in the day, every area had what were then called insane asylums. Probably the most famous was London's Bedlam, so much so that the name itself has become a synonym for insanity. In Manhattan, when people would flip out, they'd strap them to a gurney and cart them off to a rubber room in Bellevue. A few miles east of there in Queens, the local nut house was called Creedmoor. It was established in 1912 by the then Lunacy Commission of New York State. No, I didn't make that up. That was the agency's actual name. Anyway, Creedmoor was a monstrous compound on 300 acres. I once visited an inmate there, and it was one chilling and depressing experience. But that's for another show. In typical style of New York City mismanagement, parts of Creedmoor have been abandoned for decades. And some guy ventured inside to photograph them, and holy shit, it makes Chernobyl look cozy. There are rooms that literally have piles of bird shit many feet deep, like snowdrifts. I'll post a picture and link to his site on my page at thatlarryshow.com. So my girlfriend at the time, the very pointy Victoria, and Tony and his squeeze Linda are sitting at his dining room table after a night out somewhere, and he's just told us about a blowout in the shadow of creepy Creedmoor. It was his left rear tire. And Tony says, "So I get out the bumper jack and crank it up, and I get the lug nuts off and put them in a hubcap, which is inside up on the pavement. And that's when some asshole comes around a bend way too fucking fast. I see him and jump up, getting the other side of the caddy. And his douchebag comes close enough to take the paint off and hits the fucking hubcap, and the lug nuts go flying into Christ knows where." We're all listening to Tony tell his tale, and now I'm wondering if he put a round in the guy's head. Tony sparked a cool. "Yeah, I was rip shit. I'm late for a meeting, and now how the fuck am I going to get there? That's when I noticed this mook in pajamas and a bathrobe on the other side of the chain link fence. He's just staring at me like I'm a fucking puzzle or something. I figure he's an escaped nut job from Creedmoor, and I'm in no mood for any shit. And then he starts talking." Well, now we're all hanging on Tony's every word when Linda freezes with a forkful of cheesecake an inch from her mouth and says,
"Oh my God, what'd he say?"
"Fucking guy tells me he saw what happened, and he's got an idea for me. He says I should take one lug nut off the other three wheels, and that'll be enough to hold down a spare. I was really grateful, and I thank him, and ask him what the hell he's doing in Creedmoor. And that's when this asshole in a bathrobe says, 'They put me in here because I'm crazy, not stupid.' And he walks away." It was an old joke, but Tony delivered it so well, he had us for a while. And in a funny way, it does establish the link between madness and brilliance, which is where I was before I got distracted by Tony. By the way, Tony makes many appearances on this show, If you want more Tony, oh, you could go to episode 58 or 49 or 30, the Halloween one. There's plenty of Tony in there. Was it Abe Lincoln who said people are as happy as they decide to be when they get up in the morning? Some people are never happy, right? No matter what good fortune comes their way, it's never enough. There's always a flaw or defect or something to bitch about. They'll drive you fucking nuts. And they say money doesn't buy happiness. What it does buy is stuff and a measure of freedom. Get enough money and your life is your own. You don't have to trade portions of it for somebody else's money. But still, when people suddenly come into fortunes, their outlooks tend to remain happy or unhappy regardless of their net worth. Lots of us think things will make us happy, don't we? But that's usually temporary. A shiny new car, or some slick shoes or jewelry, or even a house or a yacht. After a while, there's a familiarity. The novelty wears off, and then what? We all know people like that. They live their entire lives acquiring things from one to the next, as if they've bought into that old bumper sticker. He who dies with the most toys wins. Not true. He who dies, dies. Now many of us, hell, probably most of us, think happiness can be derived through another person. And that wildly incorrect supposition is why more than half of all marriages fail. Dashed hopes and unmet expectations. It's really not all that different from the car and boat and other thing collectors, is it? That trophy guy or girl must be acquired, owned, and then what? The collection is complete? Never, because one of anything is not a collection. You see it over and over again. I worked with a woman who got involved with a married dude. He not only had a wife, he had a couple of kids, and they had this white-hot affair going for quite a while. Any time they were in a room together, the windows would fog. It was that intense. And she wanted him to leave the wife, but he was content keeping it as it was. He really didn't want to put his family through the living hell divorces invariably are. But she kept at him, and then he found a way to spend a long weekend with her, some extended business trip or some such ruse. When he returns home, his wife unpacks his suitcase for him, and finds a pair of silk panties with the unmistakable aroma of a woman in them. So he didn't even have the option of claiming some cross-dressing kink, and bam, the divorce was on. So he runs over to the Diamond District and buys sneaky panty-planting girlfriend a couple of carat rock and proposes. And she says she's gotta think about it. And she never saw him again. The moment she finally had what she wanted, she no longer wanted it. Forbidden fruit, as they say. Except she upended his life and the lives of his wife and kids, and yeah, the wheels had already come off his marriage, but this broad actually steered that guy's life off a cliff. Maybe what she really wanted was to make others miserable. There are plenty of those types out there. The only thing that makes them happy is seeing others cry. Sick fucks. Sometimes we seek the geographic route to happiness, right? I suspect this is more prevalent in America than elsewhere, and that rarely fixes anything. Certain areas of the country become trendy or stylish or hot for the most fucked up reasons. Well, it's always been that way in Los Angeles. Hollywood candy coats this town in movie after movie. Every scene is shot in Beverly Hills or on the Coast Highway in Malibu, and yeah, there is a hell of a lot of picturesque scenery here. But there are also vast swaths of concrete and razor wire. Shit you never see in any movie. Well, maybe one. Nightcrawler a few years back gave some views of the other L.A., the one that looks and is just as dirty and dangerous as any other major city with crime and poverty and urban blight. Back in the 80s, the hit TV show Miami Vice glamorized that city, and in one season, rents skyrocketed as vacancies evaporated. It was absolutely pegged to the success of the TV show, and how exciting and attractive it made that place look. You gotta wonder what the hell people who migrated there were thinking. That they could get some pastel threads and cruise around with Don Johnson and Ferrari Dinos and cigarette boats? Of course, what Miami Vice started, CSI, Miami, and Nip Tuck, and a bunch of other hit shows kept going. So we've covered the most commonly sought after but ultimately false paths to happiness. People, places, and things. We do need all of them. But if you can get yourself on course to one particular goal, you'll likely be happy no matter where you are or who you're with and whether you're in a double-wide or a Bel Air estate. So at the top of the show, I mentioned a dark bar restaurant in the bowels of Hollywood, and therein is enshrined what we all seek, the secret of happiness. I first visited the place many moons ago. It's one of those joints pretty much only the locals know about. You'll never hear it mentioned in the same breath as other LA attractions, Disneyland or Universal. As an eatery, it's never achieved the landmark status of the Palm or Dan Tanner's or Musso and Frank. It's not in an awful area, but it ain't Beverly Hills either. The attraction of the joint for 37 years has been the entertainment, Marty and Elaine. And when I first saw Marty and Elaine, I thought, okay, they're fun, they're kind of retro, kind of campy, kind of kitschy, kind of your uncle's or grandparents' entertainment. Elaine plays keyboards and flute, and Marty drums. And he drums very, very well. There's a great line from the movie Chinatown that goes, "Politicians, ugly buildings, and whores all get respectable if they last long enough." Not to say that Marty and Elaine or any of the aforementioned or were never respectable, but some time ago, their careers turned a corner from a novelty act to classic cool. Even though they haven't changed it since I first saw them a long time ago. Where the place was once a hang for aging lounge lizards with neck chains, the crowd is now remarkably diverse. Everybody wants to see and hear Marty and Elaine lay it down. They've never divulged their ages, but I would guess Marty has easily spanned 40, and Elaine can't be too far behind. Yet, they have the energy of teenagers. They work that joint 5 nights a week. Most guys Marty's age are dust, and those that are still moving are drooling in their soup in some nursing home. Marty and Elaine are living proof that the secret to happiness is doing what you love to do. You can see it when they perform, and 37 years is a powerful testament, is it not? How many people start jobs, and before they even do, are planning their retirement? That's fucked. So now you needn't get your crampons and rope to see the guy who knows the secret of happiness. You can sit in a comfy swivel chair, sipping bourbon as you dig the sounds of Marty and Elaine at LA's not-so-famous Dresden Room. I have no idea why it has that name. It doesn't look bombed out or even faintly German. But when you see them, you'll realize they are living, breathing monuments to the smartest 3 words of advice any old man in the mountain or podcaster can give. Find your bliss. Now we've got some bonus content nearly ready for all you fabulous and valued Patreonies. What is it? Why, it's a book. Downloadable and interactive. It will be available this month and thereafter only to Patreonies. And it's not just any book. It's a book with a provenance. It's not a pretty one. It was written and ready for publication by one of the biggest publishers in the country. And at the very last minute, it was killed for fear of pressure from a certain douchebag politician. Come back next Tuesday, and I'll tell you more about it. In the meantime, be sure to stop by the show's homepage at thatlarryshow.com for a look at the Dresden and Creedmoor, which is where you may wind up if you don't find your bliss. While at the show's homepage, be sure to click on the subscribe by email button so you never miss an episode. And click that Patreon button to join the Take No Shit Dojo for bonus content and other goodies like signed books and custom recordings. If you're listening on iTunes, linger a moment and throw us a 5-star review, will you? I'll see you this Sunday for episode 6 of Sinner's Sunday, where the ribs are hot, the beer is cold, the chicks are pointy, and salvation is yours for the taking. And until that time, take no shit.